I'm Eric Warista, and welcome to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam Shore and I are excited to bring you this new podcast, giving you content direct from the point of view of two long-tenured season ticket holders. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we can't wait to hear from you. I'm Eric Warista.
And this is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Well, Noam, three games this week, another very busy week for the Revs. March 12th, 3-2 loss at home to RSL. March 16th in Mexico City, losing to Pumas on penalties. And March 19th away at Charlotte, losing to Charlotte and giving Charlotte their first victory ever in MLS, with about 3 minutes left in the Pumas game. As I was watching it, my TV screen turned blue and it said emergency alert, and there was a test of the emergency broadcast system. And I think that is bad karma that actually ended up playing out the all week long.
Yeah, I think that's really symbolic for the Revolution this last week. It wasn't just three games for me. There were three very dramatic games in a way, and distinctive and really crushing in some ways for the Revolution. Is it too early in the season to press the panic button? Perhaps, but they were significant losses in different ways for the Revolution.
Yeah, absolutely. And each surprising in unique ways, and there were some common threads too.
So when we started the last podcast, I was all fired up after their big win against Pumas. 3-0. You think they have the home and away aggregate goal series in hand. All they need is one goal to really iron things out, or just not lose 3-0 in regulation or more to Pumas. So we were all pretty happy. And then we got to the Real Salt Lake game, and things were starting off well there too. It was a very interesting game. It was full of snow. It was a classic, another winter game for the Revolution. And it started off well. You had Boateng making the start, very exciting. They had a different rotation. This is what you wanted to see from the Revolution this year, with a busy schedule, a much deeper squad, new signings. They had the orange ball this time for the game, although you really couldn't even see it on TV. It was snowing so hard. But when the camera zoomed in, you could really see that bright orange ball. That was nice.
Yeah, that was a major improvement over the Pumas game.
And this game also seemed tailor-made for the Iceland man, Arnold Tristesson. And he started off, though, by missing his first pass to Buxa, and then he gets an early yellow. And I think that happened last year as well, but he had a pretty strong game. He even made a snow angel during the game. I mean, how often do you get to see soccer players make snow angels in the run of play?
Right.
And the conditions, as I mentioned, were so bad, it was even hard to see the bright orange ball on TV. And sometimes you could even see like players running up the field with their hands over their eyes just to be able to see what was going on in front of them. It almost seemed like the players needed ice crampons at some point to even just keep moving on to the field without falling down. It was pretty tough.
Yeah, it did sound like it was noticeably worse than the home game against Pumas the previous week. But by the same token, they looked pretty comfortable in that first snow game. Then also through the first two-thirds of the RSL game.
Right.
And so you just sort of wonder what snapped, what happened that led to just a total collapse in the last 30 minutes of the RSL game. And then, you know, sort of what came off, I think, is a little bit whining. I don't know that he was wrong, but when he'll saying, you know, they shouldn't have played the game or whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good look.
It was not a good look. And before that, like you said, like what happened? You had Boateng scoring a nice goal in injury time to close out the half. Boateng just continues his streak of just amazing production on the field. And the second half started off a little bit troubling with the wind, more of a problem in the direction when they switched sides. And one wondered why Arena then subbed off Boateng. But then Altidore promptly scored. So you think Arena wearing his nice winter hat again, looking like a genius, making the right subs. Right. But right after that, the Revs just, like you said, fell apart. And it was tough. The wind was tough. Maybe that's why the Revolution were able to get the upper hand in the first half with the wind more favorable for them. But they did fall apart, and Heel's post-game rant, agreed, seemed excessive. Yes, they were certainly bad conditions, and who am I to complain about playing in conditions like that from a fan's perspective? I'm sure it was tough, but both teams had to play that way, and RSL scored 3 goals.
Right, so that was a tough loss, and that was probably our bad omen for Wednesday's game at Pumas.
Right.
Where I've gone back and forth on this topic on whether they should have played more defensively or more attack-minded. My first thought watching the game was that when teams sit back, ultimately they can't absorb all the pressure and they end up giving up goals, which is what happened.
Right.
But they also were very close to pulling it off. Gonzalez had a header. They had a couple other chances to score.
They did.
That just missed. And so, you know, one goal would have been enough to get them through without going to penalties. And so it's, you can blame strategy if you want to, but also there's execution. And I think the reason that I wasn't comfortable with the decision to play so defensively was that they had a new center back pairing there, because Farrell was now out. Kessler's been out.
Kessler is out again.
And right. And so, you know, Bell and Gonzalez are both very good players, but it takes time to develop that relationship and communication on the field in game situations. And to put that much pressure on the back line in a game like that, for me, it wasn't the right way to go. But, you know, again, I think that's, it's a little bit of a nitpick because they did come so close doing it the way they did it.
That's true. They did come close. If Farrell and Kessler were there in the back line, would they have been able to hold on to the lead a little bit better? They're playing at altitude and so forth. So, yes, there were new people in the back line, new chemistry that needs to be developed. But they've been on the field before in big-time games. Gonzalez, World Cup qualifiers. Bell's been with the Revolution for a while, and Arena. It's not like they're brand new. So here's what I noticed in that game is initially I thought, wow, the Revolution or the Pumas, they're playing on this gigantic field. And I was wondering, maybe it's the camera angle and that there's a little bit further away. And I think you did some research, Eric, so thanks for that, and found that the field is actually about the same size as Gillette. So it wasn't that the field was that big. It's just that the Revolution were unable to keep up the pace that Pumas was providing on the field or adding to the field, and they couldn't keep their spacing. Perhaps it was the camera angles, or perhaps it was also the altitude. But the back line really didn't have much of a chance without the team really making use of the field and keeping Pumas off the wings and all those threatening attacks.
Right, and for those of you who may be unfamiliar with international soccer, there's not a set field dimension. You're allowed to be between 120 and 130 yards long and 70 and 80 yards wide. There is something going on because there's no way that field is the same width as Yankee Stadium's field for NYFC and the same width as Gillette Stadium. It doesn't seem possible optically.
Right. Well, whatever the reason, Pumas was running roughshod over the Revolution for most of that game. And you thought maybe they had a chance to, going into halftime, only conceding one goal. I thought, that's not bad, giving up one goal to Pumas. I'll take that. They're a good team. But then the Revolution concede right at the beginning of the second half. And you knew when that happened that it was going to be a long, long night.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there was just too much time left for Pumas to get a third goal and maybe a fourth or a fifth, because it certainly seemed possible watching the game.
Right. The game could have been over before going to PKs.
We should mention, too, not only two new center backs back there, but no Matt Turner, which they're going to have to deal with at some point. And I think I don't want to emphasize that too much, because I feel like at some point they're going to have to play without him. And that some point is going to be very soon.
Right.
Edwards has played well, but again, it's that communication and that positioning and you know, I wouldn't pin any of the losses on the goalkeeper for sure, but
yeah,
it's all part of a bigger system.
Yeah, so I think that's a key word, bigger system. The big issue for me in this Pumas game was it's not like the Revs squeaked into the Champions League via US Open Cup win or special run, you know, got them into the final of a secondary competition. They were the best in MLS last year by a long shot. They were a class team. And here they couldn't protect a three-goal lead, which they earned in a, you know, well-earned fight at Gillette Stadium. It was troubling. It was just really tough. It was tough to see it. You had hopes going in that Revolution, they didn't win the MLS Cup, but maybe they could be the first team to win the Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League. Certainly our dream of four trophies is now dashed.
One thing that this week highlighted for me was just how special last year was and just how both lucky and good they were, because you need a little bit of both. And last year they did deal with some adversity. Heal was out for, I think, about a month in August. They had a variety of injuries here and there. They had won a tremendous amount of one-goal games, but they did it so often and so consistently and in the same way that I really just think they were good more than they were lucky, but they were also a little bit lucky.
Yeah, they certainly were lucky or you know, benefited from the heroics of Matt Turner in some cases. Takes us to the Charlotte game, which was another crushing loss. But let's talk a little bit about, for me, one constant through all these games is Carlos Heal. He actually, despite complaining in the RSL game afterwards, had a strong game then. He was, I would say, maybe the biggest spark for the Revolution in the Pumas game. In fact, perhaps really the only player for the Revolution for me who really showed the level of class that one might expect from a Champions League game. Had some great balls, some great plays, vision on the field. And Charlotte, not to jump ahead, but even at the end of the game, the 95th minute, he drew a yellow card foul, which could have been a red. He was playing like it was the fifth minute of the game.
Right.
This was his third game of the week too, and hits the crossbar and a fantastic shot, almost there at the end to hit a goal. But then that was the game. He's just an amazing player to watch, and I hope he's not getting too frustrated from what's happening this week, because he certainly deserves to have a team around him that can score some goals.
Yeah, I agree completely. And he had several moments in, I think, in all three games where he is able to just turn and go faster than any other player in the league and almost any other player in any league. I mean, he really can turn and go. And it's very, very hard to dispossess him of the ball.
Right, right. There was even one sequence last night in the Charlotte game where he crossed the ball in and then the clearance went right back to him. And then he crossed it in again and the clearance again went back to Hill. It's like he's like a center of gravity with the ball. Like it just sticks to his feet. It comes back to him. He's just all over the field in the right place at the right time. Just understands how the game flows and where to be. Just an amazing player.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, just before that sequence at the end of the game that you mentioned, he was hacked down in what could have been another red card, because that was a pretty oddly vicious tackle for a game where one team was ahead. The team with the player committing the foul was ahead 3-1, and there was no time left. And to do it to a player who's, you know, the class of the league, it was just an odd play. They didn't go after one of the enforcer types like McNamara or Polster. They took a cheap shot at Heal at the end of the
game. Yeah, that was a little difficult. I think they got a little bit overexcited protecting that lead, but perhaps recognizing the threat that Heal brings to the field. Another theme for me in the Charlotte game was the Revolution kind of retrograding back to their cross-crosses theme of the year before last. Like it's a topic that we used to talk about a lot. Last year, they were converting on a lot of their offensive chances. And here we had, I think in the first half, something like 11 crosses, obviously didn't connect for goals, some close ones that certainly could have been put on frame, but really nothing dangerous came out of them. I think something like four crosses from by didn't hit their target. It was tough to see that again, a kind of a toothless offense in the final third.
That's right. I think that combined with that they must be leading the league in chances put right into the goalie's chest. They had a number of headers and shots that if they had gone anywhere else, you know, a couple feet left or right, I think they would have been very hard to save, but instead right. They went right at the keeper. And so, yeah, but I'm a little more optimistic. I'd say, you know, I don't think it's time to fly the crayon flag upside down yet. I don't think this is a team in distress. I think this is a team dealing with some unusual adversity with a very crowded schedule, three or four players who are very important, either injured or not in the lineup. You know, Bo picked up an injury. Buxa didn't play last night. So when you're playing with roughly half the lineup being backups and then you lose, I don't think it's that unexpected. But the common thread that I worry about, and I think we're going to watch this closely through the rest of the season, is they had a lot of problems defensively last year. Now they have some new people in the back, not necessarily new to the team, but just maybe getting more minutes than you'd like them to get at this point in the season. And that may benefit them later on as they figure things out. Because Kessler and Farrell, you know, Farrell's been for the team forever, so he won't have problems adjusting. And Kessler has just always looked so comfortable in that, you know, kind of sweeper role. So it's possible that, and for now, I'm saying this is just a test of the emergency broadcast system. This isn't the real thing.
Right. And the extra playing time for additional players could be a trial by fire that pays off later, hopefully. And actually, we have a new revelation in Ryan Spalding, who I thought had a fantastic game in the Rail Salt Lake match. And I think Bell's already proven himself to be a very strong player for the Revolution. And it could be just the new combinations and in combination with fatigue and all of that just led to a series of difficult situations.
Yeah, it's not to criticize any of the individual players here, because I think in general they have great players up and down the roster. Even with all these injuries, the next man up is a very solid player. It's more about the system and the time it takes to develop that communication. You know, a lot, some of it verbal, some of it nonverbal, but it just takes time. And I think that's what we saw this week.
Right. Well, they have 2 weeks off, international break. Looking forward to the New York Red Bulls in a couple of weeks. Let's see what they can bring.
So before we get to looking ahead to the Red Bull game, I just wanted to touch on something I had the opportunity to go to recently, which was the Boston Celtics retiring Kevin Garnett's jersey number. And it got me thinking. It was a great event where they brought in a lot of old Celtics, a lot of people that meant a lot to the fans. It clearly meant a lot to Garnett and some of his teammates. And it just got me thinking, Noam, if the Revs retired jerseys, and that doesn't really happen in soccer, but if the Revs retired numbers, whose jersey would you retire?
It's a good question. And, you know, one thing that was interesting around Kevin Garnett was that he won a championship for the Celtics.
Right.
And, of course, Revolution haven't won a championship, but they've had some fantastic players that you think would be all-time leaders for the Revolution and would be in that upper echelon of players.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. They don't have a title, but they've been to five championship games. And I was thinking about this quite a bit the other day, and I made some notes. And I think I came up with three names, and I think you'll agree with at least two of them, but tell me what you think. So Taylor Twellman, number 20, and Shalrie Joseph, number 21.
Absolutely.
I think those are kind of no-brainers. Those guys were the heart and soul of the team that went to four finals under Steve Nichol. Just tremendous players, did a lot of different things, and were with the team for a long time. And then the third name I wrote down, I'll admit I didn't come up with it the first time I thought through it, but then after reflecting a little bit, I wrote down Matt Rhys, the goalkeeper for that same group of players. And sure. He was here 10 years. He held the starting job, I think, the entire time, or just about the entire time. And was real, seemed like one of the leaders of the team.
Yeah, fantastic player. Not only a goalkeeper, but a penalty kick taker as well at the ends of games. Classic presence on the field for the Revolution.
Yeah. And then I wrote down a bunch of other names, and they kind of fell into two buckets for me. So I had guys who were here a long time, were very, very good, but maybe didn't rise to that level of legendary player who, you know, was like a perennial all-star, getting national team call-ups and whatnot. So I wrote down, well, that was one group. I'll tell you who was in it in a second. And then the second group was really great players who just weren't here long enough, I think, to warrant a jersey retirement. To me, says I had that number in that city for a long time, and I won a championship. Now, KG actually didn't play for the Celtics all that long, but he emotionally was the center of that team and was right. A big part of the culture. So
yeah,
the guys I put in the here a long time, amazing player, but just not quite to that level. Maybe if they had won a title, I would have bumped them up. But I wrote down Steve Ralston, Teal Bunbury, and Lee Nguyen.
Mm.
Nguyen was here 6 years. Ralston was here 7 years. And Bunbury was here 7 years. And they all right. were great players, heart and soul of the team.
Yeah.
Just don't know what it is. You could make a case for all three of those guys. Would you retire their jerseys?
I was thinking when you started off with the first three that I would add Steve Ralston to that initial group. He was also a key player in those championship games that the Revolution got to, along with Twellman, along with Joseph, along with Pat Noonan. There were so many players on that team, that core players on that team who I think were legends for the Revolution, unique players and comprised that midfield that set up their winning seasons. I would definitely put Raleigh on that. Lee Nguyen is another good one. He was with the Revolution for a while. Absolutely leader on the team.
And then the last bucket, the guy, you know, great players just not here very long. I had Jermaine Jones, I put Matt Turner on that list, Clint Dempsey, who was only here 3 years. It seemed like he was here longer, but just the 3 years. Tejon Buchanan, absolutely.
Right. Then there's also a group, I feel like, of players who had sparks of impact that were really important for the Revolution, but maybe it didn't pan out in the end to a championship, and maybe that's why some of those moments get lost in history. I'm thinking back specifically to Conno Smith, and his, in my mind, absolutely legendary goal, also in the snow against who were then the New York Metro Stars to win that series. It was an incredible comeback. We were there, Eric, one of the few people on the left side of the field towards Tony Maiola and that goal, and just saw that happening. You know, if the Revolution had gone on to win the championship that year, I think Conno Smith would have been kind of like a, I'm not sure if this is the right analogy to say like Dave Roberts, but somebody that just sparked the Revolution in a huge way and would have been recognized in a very different light. It does make me wonder, though, a little bit about the Revolution. I feel like other teams, maybe the Celtics, celebrating Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce before that from that team. And certainly the Red Sox retire a number of jerseys and or at least honor their players. I don't really recall the Revolution going back and celebrating the accomplishments post-Revolution career of some of these great players. Twellman is often at Gillette Stadium and leads the concussion awareness night drive, which is great. And he's certainly a part of the team in a certain way still, even as a broadcaster. But has Ralston ever been recognized? Has Pat Noonan ever been brought back? Some of these other great players, will Lee Nguyen come back?
I don't know what it is. Yeah, because you wouldn't retire the numbers, because soccer numbers tend to pretty much be, you know, 1 through 22 or 1 through 24. But I think they could do something. I think it would go a long way. I think the fans would like it. I mean, I think if you did something where you had Shalry Joseph, who's an assistant coach now, Twellman, who, as you mentioned, is around, and I don't know what Steve Nichols doing now, right. But, you know, just bring the three of those guys back and just recognize that team, which was exceptional for a long period of time in some special, maybe you have like, I don't know, Steve Nichol night or something.
Right.
And you bring everybody back for that. I think it would be a good event. I think you'd get a good crowd and sports. Seinfeld says we're just rooting for laundry anyway, but nostalgia is a big part of that. And you got to play up to that. I think it is something that fans appreciate as part of the game, because they you remember that Conno Smith goal. I remember that Conno Smith goal. Heck, have Conno Smith night. Anything would be good, just to kind of tie the franchise back to the past, in a way that just kind of strengthens the bond the fans have with the team already.
Yeah.
And shows that the team is aware and recognizes it.
Right. I think that's a good point for me. That's the main takeaway from this segment, actually, is that need for remembering and celebrating a little bit more. And it helps bring back what was the sort of the foundation as a new team, a new franchise, a new league in American sports, what this group of players over time represented and the kind of personalities that they brought and the character of the team that they helped develop and what we think of as a revolution today.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warrista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warrista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warrista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.